This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Nevena, and our next guest, and I'll get you to introduce, and a bit of a trigger warning too.
Thanks for that, Macca. We are very pleased to be joined by one of our regulars and favourites, Declan Brennan, freelance journalist. Welcome to Saturday Magazine.
Thank you. I do apologise that every single time I come on, there is a trigger warning that I talk about.
That's the trigger warning for the story.
Not for you.
Not for you.
Both, it's fine.
So, Nevena.
You've recently been working on an inquiry, Declan, and it has found what is said to be an appalling failure over allegations of historical child sexual abuse in Victorian public schools. Tell us a little bit about it and set the context about how the inquiry played out.
Yeah, so I was on here, I believe, last year talking about it when it started. They were open hearings. I know Daniel Andrews started this investigation, or the beginning of the hearings. The context is actually quite wide-ranging in terms of the abuse, alleged abuse, from 1960 to 1994, which is a significant time frame. And it actually was initially focused just on one school in Beaumaris, but it was expanded actually to 24 schools. Which is obviously wide-ranging, and it eventually found at a minimum 109 alleged victims. And four teachers, quite high up in the education department, quite well known in the education department, who were found found to have committed quite a lot of offences. Three of them were imprisoned, and one of them died without ever having faced any punishment or any,
And so, attending these inquiries, what sense did you get from people who were giving testimony there, as well as the responses?
So, I didn't go to all of them. I will preface that, but I think it was really interesting. And obviously, when you read the testimony afterwards as well, there's two sort of examples. I think that there's the victims, which have such a horrific story to tell. A lot of them are very young when these events happened, but there's also the wider of their community, the wider secondary victims who are family or friends who suffered an incredible amount as well, whether this is tales of abuse afterwards in terms of people who lashed out violently or suffered from a really awful addiction or suffered from lack of sexual desire, things like that. So the long-lasting impact didn't just affect the victim, as awful as that is, but it actually affected their loved ones as well. And I think that's sort of something that we forget when it comes to these things, whether it is or this inquiry is a good example, but like it's so wide-ranging and so impactful and such a huge amount of people that it isn't just X, it's X plus quite a lot for every single victim. And I think that was really difficult. And then, like, listening to stories or reading stories about sort of LGBTQ people too, like, who had, not just in this context, but in a wider context of abuse, who had struggled afterwards to be able to even come out when they were older, because they had felt such shame as a young person, or had even been guilted into sort of not wanting to come out or not mentioning the story because it would be, you know, people are going to think you're gay if you talk about this or stuff like that. We've all been to school. I was a schoolboy, you know, where these things are already pretty prevalent. And so dealing with the one example, the awful abuse that you suffer, and then that guilt of putting it on, I suppose, or dealing with it is quite another thing. But I wanted to mention that we talk a lot about abuse in schooling, in religious institutions, whether that is obviously Catholicism, probably the main one, but most religious institutions who run schools in Australia have suffered allegations or been found to be liable for these things. But this is a state-run school or schooling system in Victoria. And that's 24 schools. And the findings, I don't know if I'm going to preface your questions, but the findings found it was a massive cover-up.
Yeah.
One of the teachers, after he was alleged and police had investigated, they moved him to an administration role and he worked for another 15 years earning stuff to get a pension, like dealing with children. Parents knew about this, and the findings found that the reputation of the education department was the highest value rather than a child's safety.
I mean, the thing, Declan, I had some involvement with the inquiry, as did the principal of Trinity Grammar, about the establishment, why a memorial, a survivor's memorial is important. And the way that the folk running the inquiry engaged was fantastic. Their understanding of the issues, their compassion, their empathy, but also when you look at their findings, and, you know, there's a common thread here. You talk about, you know, the education department basically looking the other way and, you know, the
actively looking the other way.
You know, the old practice of pass the pedophile around. So from parish to parish or from school to school.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it's an independent school, whether it's a government school, whether it's a community organisation, that this, the lack of accountability for people in power who allow this to happen, I often wonder when governments are really going, you know, to do what they need to do to stop this happening, because they know it's happening. But the organisations, it's happening. So, you know, your observations of the inquiry are pretty emotional and gut-wrenching inquiry. Do you think the evidence and the findings are going to help bring about change? I believe they will, but I'm interested in your take on that.
Well, I will say before that, there still hasn't been an inquiry into the state system yet.
No.
That's 60 years, 1960. There still hasn't been an investigation.
Yeah.
So the department knows about this. And so nothing's been investigated, which is just beyond the pale. And I will say that as a stereotype, but probably not all wrong, a lot of people who do go to state schools do suffer from lower socioeconomic areas who then perhaps can't afford the medical care. And that's not to sort of say anyone who went to a private school can, but you're already, they're in the responsibility of the state, and the state's failed them.
Hmm.
Like, that's our taxpayer money paying for a school that has failed them consistently and has refused. I mean, you've got an investigation here and an inquiry, and that's great, but they refuse to take any real responsibility other than apology, which is, I mean, fine. But you talk about like a legacy or how it will make people feel. I know to change it slightly, we've seen the Urich investigations and truth-telling hearings.
Yes.
And I know from my regular discussions with First Nations people, and I deal a lot in that sphere, it has been hugely beneficial. I'm not saying it's something that makes things better or anything like that, but it has been hugely beneficial to get things off people's chest and discuss it in a public forum. And I know that has been one of the recommendations for for this one as well, as a truth-telling style forum. And I think that would be incredibly beneficial. This, not so much as an inquiry, but as a platform to actually openly discuss what people have experienced, what they have suffered. And I mean, I'm not going to speak for anybody who's been a victim of abuse, and I think every single person has a different experience and a different way of handling things. But I think that's a really important position to take from any government organisation, to provide that platform and to leave it open for people to handle it however they want to, or to present any way they want to at it.
It is part of the path to justice, but what must follow is also accountability, like you said. And I really appreciate the point that you made in the past, and well, it continues now. So much of this is individualized. No, it's one perpetrator. Oh, no, it's the fault of the victim. And what these processes and systems should be seeking to do that is erupting that. It should say, no, it's not just a victim survivor. It's the victim survivor's families, loved ones, school communities. It's all of that. It's not just the perpetrator of this disgusting violence. It's the systems, it's the people around them that allowed this to perpetuate. It's the people who were moved around knowingly, like you said, and allowed to work on our taxpayer dollar for years, perpetuating who knows how many more crimes in that. That needs to be part of the reckoning of this, because this is an incredibly important and well overdue first step. But without the following steps, it's just, you know, it just falls off a cliff.
But I mean, it seems to be that they're individuals. Oh, it's just one individual or one individual. But when it comes to something like youth crime, it's everybody.
Yeah.
Or it's anybody who's out of power, it's, oh, it's everybody. Or it's a sweeping statement to criticise groups of people. But when it comes to people in power, when it's robo-debt, ah, it's just one. There was one sort of bureaucrat or something like that, or in this, oh, it's just a couple of bureaucrats. But it's a sweeping thing.
It's a system.
And these are people that actually need to be held account. But instead, we in Australia seem to focus on the smallest fish in the world and just hammer it to death. Mm. And these people who, like, I made the point earlier, it's not 109 people, besides the fact that it's in more likelihood more than that. It's thousands of people, because every single one of them has a whole network that has suffered. And we all know people with that. We all know people who've suffered abuse and how difficult it can be to experience that as a close contact. And it's not you playing the victim. That is just the reality. And people's lives are never the same. They might not be horrific, but it's never the same. And it's a department that has just apologised and that's it. No one's held to account. No one's there. And I know people have probably retired or moved on, but it just seems to keep happening. And I mean, surely we're getting sick of people just saying sorry.
Mm.
Like, sorry doesn't mean anything. It just doesn't do anything. And I'm not a victim of abuse, but I'm not going to speak for people who are victims of abuse, but surely that is just such a cop-out.
Mm. You know, Declan, as a survivor, when the organisation says sorry, that is hugely important. But what is more important is that the organisation changes and puts in place policies and protocols to do their very best to make sure it doesn't happen again. And that's, you know, and I can't speak for all survivors. I can only speak for myself. Apology is hugely important because it's about recognition. But actually changing the environment, the system where this has happened, that is what makes the most impact, because for the people that follow you and the people, the perpetrators, it becomes more and more difficult for them to do what they do. But if the system is vigilant and the system protects the most vulnerable, remember this is children, that is what needs to happen. And it starts at the local level, at the institution, whatever it is, sporting club, school, church, whatever. It then, you know, where there's government funding, it starts with that department. But ultimately, it actually lands on the minister's desk and it lands on the government's desk. Yes, everyone in the community has a responsibility to call this out, but there is a lack of accountability that is really demonstrated in this inquiry, that the education department, they've got blood on their hands.
Yeah, and
they need to be held accountable.
We're going to take a quick break. Yeah. You are on Saturday Magazine with Nevena and Macca. We're talking about the inquiry into historical abuse allegations. Stay tuned. There's more. You are on Saturday Magazine with Nevena and Macca. A warning to our listeners, we are discussing inquiry into the historical abuse allegations at Bay Morris and other public schools with Declan Brennan, freelance journalist.
I just wanted to say, sorry, Macca, before, you were absolutely right about apology being incredibly important. What I was trying to say is that the cop-out is when it happens and then it nothing happens and people apologise again later on. And it just seems to be, you just hear a sorry and then nothing actually changes and then later on you hear another sorry and it's like, well, what?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't do anything if there's no changes. You're right, change is the only thing that makes not experience bearable, but experience where you go, hopefully other people don't experience these things. If there's no change, it almost feels pointless.
And it is, you know, saying sorry is so important to the survivor and for the institution to acknowledge what's happened. But if nothing changes, it's actually virtue signalling where the signal has no virtue.
And it actually disregards people's evidence at these things, which is an incredibly difficult situation for people to put all their heart and soul into a testimony, and nothing happens. And we've seen these previously in other ones where people have to go through court or whatever it is. So it actually is, it's beyond virtue signaling. It's disregarding somebody's experience completely for a quick sign on a paper, and that's it.
And, you know, for federal and state governments of all colours over the decades, have spoken a lot about this. There's been apologies. You know, there's been a lot of law change, and particularly in Victoria, a lot of law change that has helped historical victims bring their case to light and to hold people to account. So I'm not saying things haven't changed, but they need to, and government has the opportunity to, following this inquiry and in this area, there can be nothing. I'm sorry. There can be no, and I'm saying sorry because I'm sorry that it's not being fixed. There can be nothing more important than the protection of children. What could be more important than that? A new Mikey system? No. Anything else? No. That is what is most important.
Yeah, and I mean, Mikey system would be nice.
Yeah.
The inquiry does make 9 recommendations for reform. Can you talk us through them, Declan?
I mean, the one that I was definitely most focusing on was definitely the truth-telling, and I know that actually has several parts to it, but there were, I must admit, I haven't followed them as much as I should have, because I was so focused on the truth-telling aspect of it, but there was, it found, I suppose, like just an absence of policy and procedures in the government, an absence of policy and procedures in the government in general, or the department. It found, like, I suppose, just an incredible lack of record keeping in general, a lack of writing things down at the most, which is such a basic thing. And so, like, a lot of the recommendations I haven't been on the top of, I must have been as much of that, but I know that the truth-telling one was the one I focused on so much because I know it has several parts to it, but it was about sort of being able to give survivors the opportunity to discuss things. But then I know a lot of them were around sort of things that I really feel should have been there a long time ago, around record keeping, around responsibility for departments, around reporting issues and actually being dealt with at a timely manner rather than them being sort of disregarded and people's stories being disregarded. You know, they're just not being listened to. And I just,
Important story forward, and one we'll be tracking to see how these recommendations are implemented, as well as if the department's going to follow through with a memorial at Bay Morris. But you've recently returned from Dubbo, Declan. What took you there and what were you working on?
Oh, God. So I'm so sorry once again for being so grim when I come on. This is actually something really, really important. It's probably what I've been focusing on quite a lot, which is I work a lot in First Nations media. So I covered a coronial inquest in Dubbo, and it was about a really young man called Dougie Hampson, who presented to Dubbo Hospital with incredible pain in his stomach. He was viewed and deemed to suffer from CHS, which is like an ailment that impacts long-term cannabis users. They gave him no CT scan. They doped him up on domperidol and some morphine. Then the next day they let him go. No scan, etc. And then the next day he died from duodenal ulcers in his stomach. And so the inquest has actually been looking at, I suppose, racism in the healthcare system throughout New South Wales, but also Australia. But it focused actually on a lot of things that perhaps us sort of inner-city liberal-minded people fall into in a degree, which was called colorblind racism, where a lot of people will say, I don't see color at all. Yeah. Oh, I don't know what it is, because the doctor who was giving testimony said he didn't know this person was Indigenous, even though he presented as Aboriginal and he had ticked the box, had ticked it. But we seem to not realise, or people not realise, that Aboriginal people, and it came out during this inquiry, have such... I will preface this, sorry, that I'm not speaking for Aboriginal people, but this is what came out during the inquiry. A fear of the medical system in a lot of hospitals, especially regional hospitals. And by not acknowledging people's Aboriginality and then treating them based on that, by understanding the trauma, understanding the way these things are, Dougie died. And it was one of the most... I came on here a little while ago and talked about a coronial inquest for two girls, and that was horrific. And I found it very difficult, but it was quite a while ago, and that doesn't make it better or worse. It just... This is a very modern thing. This happened in 2021, and Dougie is one of many people who have gone into hospital as an Aboriginal person and have not been treated the same. And that the system, I think, in general, doesn't treat Aboriginal people well. In these, and we think about it in terms of incarceration, and these are very important topics that get talked about a lot, about closing the gap. But Indigenous people in the medical system are routinely treated poorly and are routinely disregarded. And he wasn't even given a CT scan, despite the doctor, the nurse writing 10 out of 10 pain in his stomach. He was given as one of the lawyers told me, they just thought he was an Aboriginal guy, so they doped him up and let him sleep for the night and let him go the next day.
One of our listeners has texted in, 369 says, racism, ableism and homo-transphobia are systemic in our health system. And they certainly are. This is something that many First Nations advocates, community members, leaders and elders have spoken out for decades on end. The difficulty in making it to hospital, the difficulty of navigating forms and systems that might be in your fourth language, let alone any other issues that you might have with that your family members have had. And still, to people go to these inquiries as doctors, as nurses, and say something as blatant as "I don't see race," then you see a person that is less than. You may not be on the surface discussing that, but it's hugely disappointing that this persists. But the work that you're doing is all the more important to, like you say, uplift these stories, because these are the news. These are the real news stories of this country.
Yeah, and I think that they can be a bit depressing to hear, but like, people experience this. This isn't just something that no one's living. These are people every single day who experience these things, and we should not only know about them, but we should look at it instead of just viewing them from 40,000 feet and going, "Oh, that's bad." No, actually look at why this stuff is happening, because it's one thing to say, "Oh, Black Lives Matter" or something like that, and then you cross the street when you see somebody you don't trust or something like that. And that, for me, is like, I think the most important part about this was that it was a view that, "Oh, healthcare is, you know, pretty progressive," but it's actually not. Mm. Like, it's just the same as other aspects for First Nations people. They're treated horrifically, and it's not quite as well understood, especially by people who we might say are progressive or white liberal kind of people. And so and I think the we saw it actually with a really tragic incident at St. Vincent's a couple of weeks ago with a young lady, and it's very much the same thing. The treatment of First Nations people, it isn't meant to be different or treating people different because of how they... It is just an understanding of somebody's context and understanding somebody's trauma and how they present to a medical facility needs to be managed in a different way. It's not better, it's not worse, it's just different.
Declan, thank you for joining us on Saturday Magazine. Two difficult but all the more important conversations. We look forward to having you on the show again soon. You are on Saturday Magazine with Nevena and Macca. Stay tuned. There's plenty more.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.